This is Audible.
11 on Top by Janet Ivanovich. Read for you by Lorelei King. My name is Stephanie Plum. When I was 18, I got a job working a hot dog stand on the boardwalk on the Jersey Shore. I worked the last shift at Dave's Dogs, and I was supposed to start shutting down a half hour before closing so I could clean up for the day crew. Dave Lugie owned the dog stand and came by every night to lock the stand down. He checked the garbage to make sure nothing good was thrown away, and he counted the dogs that were left on the grill. "You gotta plan ahead," Dave told me every night. "You got more than 5 dogs left on the grill when we close, I'm gonna fire your ass and hire someone with bigger tits." So every night, 15 minutes before closing, before Dave showed up, I ate hot dogs. Not a good way to go when you're working at the shore nights and on the beach in a skimpy bathing suit by day. One night, I ate 14 hot dogs. Well, hell, I needed the job. For years, Dave's Dogs took the number one slot on my list of all-time crappy jobs held. This morning, I decided my present position had finally won the honor of replacing Dave's Dogs. I'm a bounty hunter. A bond enforcement agent, if you want to make me sound more legitimate. I work for my cousin Vinny in his bail bonds office in the Chambersburg section of Trenton. At least, I used to work for my cousin Vinny. 30 seconds ago, I quit. I handed in the phony badge I bought off the net. I gave back my cuffs, and I dropped my remaining open files on Connie's desk. Vinny writes the bonds. Connie shuffles the paperwork. My sidekick Lula files, when the mood strikes her. And an incredibly sexy, incredibly handsome badass named Ranger and I hunt down the morons who don't show up for trial. Until today. As of 30 seconds ago, all the morons got transferred to Ranger's list.
"Give me a break," Connie said. "You can't quit. I got a stack of open files."
"Give them to Ranger."
"Ranger doesn't do the low bonds. He only takes the high-risk cases."
"Give them to Lula." Lula was standing hand on hip, watching me spar with Connie. Lula's a size 16 black woman squashed into size 10 leopard print spandex. And the weird thing is, in her own way, Lula looks pretty good in the animal spandex.
"Hell yeah," Lula said. "I could catch them sons of bitches, only I'm gonna miss you. What are you gonna do if you don't work here? And what brought this on?"
"Look at me," I said. "What do you see?"
"I see a mess," Lula said. "You should take better care of yourself."
"I went after Sam Sporky this morning."
"Melonhead Sporky?"
"Yeah, Melonhead. I chased him through 3 yards. A dog tore a hole in my jeans. Some crazy old lady shot at me. And I finally tackled Sporky behind the Tip Top Cafe."
"Looks like it was garbage day," Lula said. "You don't smell too good. And you got something that looks like mustard all over your ass. Least I hope that's mustard."
"There were a bunch of garbage bags at the curb, and Melonhead rolled me into them. We made sort of a mess. And when I finally got him in cuffs, he spit on me."
"I imagine that's the glob of something stuck in your hair."
"No, he spit on my shoe. Is there something in my hair?" Lula gave an involuntary shiver.
"Sounds like a normal day," Connie said. "Hard to believe you're quitting because of Melonhead."
Truth is, I don't exactly know why I was quitting. My stomach feels icky when I get up in the morning, and I go to bed at night wondering where my life is heading. I've been working as a bounty hunter for a while now, and I'm not the world's best. I barely make enough money to cover my rent each month. I've been stalked by crazed killers, taunted by naked fat men, firebombed, shot at, spat at, chased by humping dogs, rolled in garbage, and my cars get destroyed at an alarming rate. And maybe the 2 men in my life add to the icky feeling in my stomach. They're both Mr. Right, and they're both Mr. Wrong. I wasn't sure if I wanted a relationship with either of them, and I hadn't a clue how to choose between them. One wanted to marry me, sometimes. His name was Joe Morelli, and he was a Trenton cop. Ranger was the other guy. And I wasn't sure what he wanted to do with me, beyond get me naked and put a smile on my face. Plus, there was the note that got slipped under my door 2 days ago. "I'm back." What the heck did that mean? And the follow-up note tacked to my windshield. "Did you think I was dead?" My life is too weird. It's time for a change. Time to get a more sensible job and sort out my future. Connie and Lula shifted their attention from me to the front door. I didn't hear the door open, and I didn't hear footsteps. So either Connie and Lula were hallucinating, or else Ranger was in the room. Ranger is the mystery man. He only wears black, smells warm and sexy, and is 100% pure, perfectly toned muscle. He gets his dark complexion and liquid brown eyes from Cuban ancestors. He was Special Forces, and that's about all anyone knows about Ranger. Well, hell, when you smell that good and look that good, who cares about anything else anyway? Ranger reached around me and dropped a file and a body receipt on Connie's desk.
I brought Angel Robbie in last night. You can mail the check to Rangeman.
Rangeman is Ranger's company. It's located in an office building in Center City and specializes in security systems and fugitive apprehension.
I got big news, Lula said to Ranger. I've been promoted to bounty hunter on account of Stephanie just quit.
Ranger picked a couple strands of sauerkraut off my shirt and pitched them into Connie's wastebasket.
Is that true?
Yes. I'm done fighting crime. I'm thinking of getting a job at the button factory.
I don't have a lot of domestic instincts, Ranger said to me,
his attention fixing on the unidentifiable glob of goo in my hair.
But I have a real strong urge to take you home and hose you down.
I went dry mouth. Lula fanned herself with a file. I appreciate the offer, I told him. Maybe some other time.
Babe,
Ranger said on a smile. He nodded to Lula and Connie and left the office. No one said anything until he drove off in his shiny black Porsche Turbo.
I think I wet my pants, Lula said.
I drove back to my apartment, took a shower, and got dressed up in a stretchy white tank top and a tailored black suit with a short skirt. I stepped into 4-inch black heels, fluffed up my almost shoulder-length curly brown hair, and added one last layer to my mascara and lipstick. I'd taken a couple minutes to print out a resume on my computer. It was pathetically short. Graduated with mediocre grades from Douglas College. Worked as a lingerie buyer for a cheap department store for a bunch of years. Got fired. Tracked down scumbags for my cousin Vinny. Seeking management position in a classy company. Of course, this was Jersey, and classy here might not be the national standard. I grabbed my shoulder bag and yelled goodbye to my roomie, Rex the hamster. Rex lives in a glass aquarium on the kitchen counter. Rex is pretty much nocturnal, so we're sort of like ships passing in the night. Once in a while, I drop a cheese doodle into his cage, and he emerges from his soup can home to retrieve the doodle. That's about as complicated as our relationship gets. I exited my apartment and locked up behind me. I took the elevator to the lobby, pushed through the double glass doors, and crossed the lot to my car. I was driving a dark green Saturn SL2. The Saturn had been the special of the day at Generous George's Used Car Emporium. I'd actually wanted a Lexus SC430, but Generous George thought the Saturn was more in line with my budget constraints. I slid behind the wheel and cranked the engine over. I was heading off to apply for a job at the button factory, and I was feeling down about it. I was telling myself it was a new beginning, but truth is, it felt more like a sad ending. I turned onto Hamilton and drove a couple blocks to Tasty Pastry Bakery, thinking a donut would be just the thing to brighten my mood. 5 minutes later, I was on the sidewalk in front of the bakery, donut bag in hand, and I was face to face with Morelli. Morelli is 6 feet of lean, hard muscle and hot Italian libido. He's Jersey guy smart, and he's not a man you'd want to annoy, unless you're me. I've been annoying Morelli all my life.
I was driving by and saw you go in, Morelli said, eyeing the bakery bag. Boston creams?
I needed happy food.
You should have called me, he said, hooking his finger into the neckline of my white tank, pulling the neck out to take a look inside. I have just the thing to make you happy.
I've cohabitated with Morelli from time to time, and I knew this to be true.
Tempting, but no, I said, opening the bag, sharing the donuts with Morelli. I have a job interview at the button factory. I'm done with bond enforcement.
When did this happen?
About an hour ago. Okay, I don't actually have an interview appointment, but Karen Slobodsky works in the personnel office, and she said I should look her up if I ever wanted a job.
I could give you a job, Morelli said. The pay wouldn't be great, but the benefits would be pretty decent.
Gee, that's the second scariest offer I've had today.
And the scariest offer would be?
I didn't think it was smart to tell Morelli about Ranger's offer of a hosing down. Morelli was wearing a gun on his hip, and Ranger wore guns on multiple parts of his body. Seemed like a bad idea to say something that might ratchet up the competition between them. I leaned into Morelli and kissed him lightly on the mouth. It's too scary to share. He felt nice against me, and he tasted like donut. I ran the tip of my tongue along his lower lip. Yum. Morelli's fingers curled into the back of my jacket.
Yum is a little mild for what I'm feeling. Maybe we could get together tonight.
For pizza?
Yeah, that too.
I'd been taking a time out from Morelli and Ranger, hoping to get a better grip on my feelings, but I wasn't making much progress. It was like choosing between birthday cake and a big boy margarita. How could I possibly decide? Okay, I said. I'll meet you at Pino's.
I was thinking my house. The Mets are playing, and Bob misses you.
Bob is Morelli's dog. Bob is a big, orange, incredibly huggable, shaggy-haired monster with an eating disorder. Bob eats everything. No fair. You're using Bob to lure me to your house.
So?
I blew out a sigh. I'll be over around 6. The Button Factory is just beyond the city limits of North Trenton. I pulled the Saturn into the parking lot, and I sashayed into the lobby. Somewhere not far off, I could hear machines stamping out buttons. I approached the reception desk and asked for Karen Slobodsky.
Sorry, the woman said. She just quit. Stormed out of here yelling something about sexual harassment.
So there's a job opening? I asked, thinking my day was finally turning lucky.
Sure looks that way. I'll buzz her boss, Jimmy Al-Izzy.
10 minutes later, I was in Al-Izzy's office, sitting across from him. He had slicked back black hair and an accent and skin tone that had me thinking Indian.
So, you were a bounty hunter, he said, skimming over my resume. That is a quite exciting job. Why would you want to quit such a job?
I'm looking for something that has more potential for advancement.
Oh dear, that would be my job you would eventually be seeking.
Yes, well, I'm sure it would take years, and then who knows? You might be president of the company by then.
You are an outrageous flatterer.
I like that.
And what would you do if I were to ask you for sexual favors?
I guess I'd ignore you. Unless you got physical. Then I'd have to kick you in a place that hurt a lot, and you probably wouldn't be able to father any children.
That sounds fair. It happens that I have an immediate position to fill, so you're hired. You can start tomorrow promptly at 8 o'clock. Do not be late.
Wonderful. I have a real job in a nice, clean office where no one will shoot at me. I should be happy, yes? This was what I wanted, wasn't it? Then why do I feel so depressed? When I arrived at Morelli's house, his SUV was parked curbside, and Morelli and Bob were sitting on Morelli's tiny front porch. Morelli got to his feet, slid his arm around my shoulders, and hugged me to him for a friendly kiss.
How'd the interview go?
I got the job. I start tomorrow. Morelli grinned down at me and slid his hands under my t-shirt.
We should celebrate.
His hands felt nice against my skin, but I was starving, and I didn't want to encourage any further celebrating until I got my pizza. He pulled me close and kissed his way up my neck. By the time he got to my mouth, I was thinking the pizza could wait. And then we heard it. The pizza delivery car coming down the street, stopping at the curb. Morelli cut his eyes to the kid getting out of the car.
Minor setback with the celebration plan.
No rush, I told him. We have all night. Morelli's eyes got soft and dark and dreamy, sort of the way Bob's eyes got when he ate Tasty Cake butterscotch crimpets and then someone rubbed his belly.
I like the way that sounds.
2 minutes later, we were on the couch in Morelli's living room, watching the pre-game show, eating pizza and drinking beer. I heard you were working on the Baroni case, I said to Morelli. Having any luck with it? Morelli took a second piece of pizza.
I have a lot out on it. So far, nothing's come in.
Michael Baroni mysteriously disappeared 8 days ago. He was 62 years old and in good health when he vanished. He owned a nice house in the heart of the burg, and a hardware store on the corner of Rudd and Liberty Street. He left behind a wife, 2 dogs, and 3 adult sons. One of the Baroni boys graduated with me, and one graduated 2 years earlier with Morelli. There aren't a lot of secrets in the Berg, and according to Berg gossip, Michael Baroni didn't have a girlfriend, didn't play the numbers, and didn't have mob ties. His hardware store was running in the black. He didn't do a lot of drinking, and he wasn't hooked on Levitra. Baroni was last seen closing and locking the back door to the hardware store at the end of the day. He got into his car, drove away, and poof, no more Michael Baroni. "Did you ever find Baroni's car?" I asked Morelli.
"No car, no body, no sign of struggle. He was alone when Saul Rosen saw him lock up and take off."
"Do you think it's a random crime? Baroni was in the wrong place at the wrong time?"
"No. Baroni lived 4 blocks from his store. Every day he went straight home from work, 4 blocks through the Berg. If something had gone down on Baroni's usual route home, someone would have heard or seen something. The day Baroni disappeared, he went someplace else. He didn't take his usual route home."
"Maybe he just got tired of it all. Maybe he started driving west and didn't stop until he got to Flagstaff." Morelli fed his pizza crust to Bob.
"We've had 2 other guys disappear on the exact same day as Baroni. Both these guys own their own businesses. They both locked up at the end of the day and were never seen again. One of the men was real stable. He had a wife and kids. He went to church. He ran a bar on Stark Street, but he was clean. The other guy, Benny Gorman, owned a garage. Probably a chump change chop shop. He'd done time for armed robbery and grand theft auto. And 2 months ago, he was charged with assault with a deadly weapon. He was supposed to go to trial last week, but failed to appear. Ordinarily, I'd say he skipped because of the charge, but I'm not so sure on this one."
"Did Vinny bond Gorman out?"
"Yeah, I talked to Connie. She handed Gorman off to Ranger."
"And you think the 3 guys are connected?" A commercial came on, and Morelli channel surfed through a bunch of stations.
"Dunno. I just have a feeling. It's too strong a coincidence."
I gave Bob the last piece of pizza and snuggled closer to Morelli.
"I have feelings about other things, too," Morelli said, sliding an arm around my shoulders. "Would you like me to tell you about my other feelings?"
My toes curled in my shoes, and I got warm in a bunch of private places. And that was the last we saw of the game. Morelli is an early riser, in many ways. I had a memory of him kissing my bare shoulder, whispering an obscene suggestion, and leaving the bed. He returned a short time later with his hair still damp from the shower. He kissed me again and wished me luck with my new job, and then he was gone, off on his mission to rid Trenton of bad guys. It was still dark in Morelli's bedroom. The bed was warm and comfy. I burrowed under the quilt, and when I reawakened, the sunlight was pouring into the room through a break in the curtain. I had a moment of absolute delicious satisfaction, immediately followed by panic. According to the bedside clock, it was 9 o'clock. I was massively late for my first day at the button factory. I scrambled out of bed, gathered my clothes up off the floor, and tugged them on. I didn't bother with makeup or hair. I took the stairs at a run, grabbed my purse and my car keys, and bolted out of the house. I skirted traffic as best I could, pulled into the Button Factory parking lot on 2 wheels, parked, jumped out of the car, and hit the pavement running. The time was 9:30. I was 1.5 hours late. I took the stairs to save time, and I was sweating by the time I skidded to a stop in Alizy's office.
"You are late," Alizy said. "I told you that you must be on time. And look at you. You are in a t-shirt. If you are going to be late, you should at least wear something that is revealing and shows me your breasts. You are fired."
"If you give me another chance, I'll wear something revealing tomorrow."
"Will you perform a lewd act?"
"No."
"Well then, you are still fired."
"That's horrible. I'm going to report you for sexual harassment."
"It will only serve to enhance my reputation."
"Fine. I didn't want this job anyway." I turned on my heel and flounced out of Alizy's office, down the stairs, through the lobby, and crossed the lot to my car. I gave the door a vicious kick, wrenched it open, and slid behind the wheel. I punched Metallica into the sound system, cranked it up, and motored across town. By the time I got to Hamilton, I was feeling pretty decent. I had the whole day to myself. True, I wasn't making any money, but there was always tomorrow, right? I cut over 2 blocks to High Street and parked in front of my parents' house. Grandma Mazur was at the front door when I set foot on the porch. Grandma moved in with my parents when my Grandpa Mazur got a hot pass to heaven, compliments of more than a half century of bacon fat and butter cookies.
"We heard you quit your job," Grandma said. "I need to know the details. I got a beauty parlor appointment this afternoon, and I gotta get the story straight."
"Not much of a story," I said, following Grandma into the hallway foyer. "I just thought it was time for a change."
"That's it? I can't tell people that story. It's boring. How about we tell them you're pregnant? Or there was a big contract put on your head unless you gave up being a bounty hunter."
"Sorry, none of those things are true."
"Yeah, but that don't matter. Everybody knows you can't believe everything you hear."
My mother was at the dining room table with a bunch of round pieces of paper spread out in front of her. My sister Valerie was getting married in a week, and my mother was still working on the seating arrangements. "I can't make this work," my mother said. "I'm going to have to seat the Krugers at two different tables, and no one gets along with old Mrs. Kruger." I love my sister, but I'd deport her to Bosnia if I thought her to get me out of her wedding. I'm supposed to be her maid of honor. And somehow, through my lack of participation and a fabric swatch inaccuracy, I've been ordered a gown that makes me look like a giant eggplant. "We heard you quit your job," my mother said to me. "Thank goodness. I can finally sleep at night knowing you're not running around town chasing after criminals. And I understand you have a wonderful job at the button factory. Marjorie Kuzak called yesterday and told us all about it."
"Actually, I sort of got fired from that job."
"Already? How could you possibly get fired on your first day?"
"It's complicated. I don't suppose you know anybody who's hiring."
"I saw a sign up at the cleaners," Grandma said.
"I was hoping for something a little more challenging."
"Dry cleaning's challenging. It's not easy getting all them spots out."
"And no one would shoot at you," my mother said. "No one ever robs a dry cleaner."
I had to admit, that part appealed to me. It would be nice not to have to worry about getting shot. Maybe working at the dry cleaners would be an okay temporary job until the right thing came along. I got myself a cup of coffee and a piece of apple pie.
"What's going on in the Berg?" I asked my mother.
"Harry Farstein died yesterday. Heart attack. He's at Steva's."
"He's going to have a viewing tonight," Grandma said. "It's going to be a good one, too. You should come with me. I could use a ride."
Grandma loved going to viewings. Steva's funeral home was the social center of the Berg. I thought having my thumb amputated would be a preferred activity.
"And everyone's going to be talking about the Baroni thing," Grandma said. "I can't believe he hasn't turned up. It's like he was abducted by Martians."
Okay, now this interested me. Morelli was working on the Baroni disappearance, and Ranger was working on the Gorman disappearance, which might be connected to the Baroni disappearance. I was glad I wasn't working on either of those cases, but on the other hand, I felt a smidgen left out. So sue me. I'm nosy.
"Sure, I'll pick you up at 7 o'clock.
"Your father got gravy on his gray slacks," my mother said. "If you're going to apply for a job at the cleaner, would you mind taking the slacks with you?" A half hour later, I had a job with Can Clean. The hours were 7 to 3. The pay wasn't great, but I could wear jeans and a t-shirt to work, and they confirmed my mother's suspicion that none of their employees had been shot while on the job. I handed over the gravy-stained slacks and agreed to show up at 7 the next morning. I didn't feel quite as nauseated as I had after getting the button factory job, so I was making progress, right? I drove 3 blocks down Hamilton and stopped at the bonds office to say hello.
"Look what the wind blew in," Lula said when she saw me. "I heard you got the job at the button factory."
"I got fired."
"That was fast," Lula said. "It takes most people a couple days to get fired."
"Maybe it all worked out for the best. I got another job already, at Can Clean."
"Do you get a discount?" Lula wanted to know. "I got some dry cleaner to send out. You could pick it up tomorrow here at the office on your way to work."
"Sure," I said. "Why not?"
Grandma was waiting at the door when I drove up.
"I'm ready to go. We don't get a move on, we're not going to get a good seat. There's going to be a crowd tonight, and ever since Spiro took off, Steva hasn't been all that good with organization. Spiro was a nasty little cockroach, but he could organize a crowd like no one else."
Spiro was Constantine Steva's kid. I went to school with Spiro, and near the end, I guess I inadvertently helped him disappear. He was a miserable excuse for a human being, involved in running guns and God knows what else. He tried to kill Grandma and me,
There was a shootout and a spectacular fire at the funeral home, and somehow in the confusion, Spiro vanished into thin air. When I got the note saying, "I'm back," and "Did you think I was dead?" Spiro was one of the potential psychos who came to mind. Sad to say, he was just one name among many. The funeral home was on Hamilton, a couple blocks down from the bail bonds office. It had been rebuilt after the fire, and was now a jumble of new brick construction and old Victorian mansion. Some of the viewing rooms and all of the embalming rooms were located in the new brick addition at the rear. The preferred viewing rooms were in the front, and Steva had given them names. The Blue Salon, the Rest in Peace Salon, and the Executive Slumber Salon. It was a 5-minute drive from my parents' house to Steva's. I dropped Grandma at the door and found street parking half a block away. When I got to the funeral home, Grandma was waiting for me at the entrance to the Executive Slumber Salon.
"I'm gonna go take a look at Harry."
Looking at dead people wasn't high on my list of favorite activities, so I separated from Grandma and wandered to the far side of the entrance hall where complimentary cookies had been set out. I scarfed down a couple sugar cookies, and I felt a prickling sensation at the back of my neck. I turned and looked across the room and saw Morelli's Grandma Bella glaring at me. Grandma Bella is a white-haired old lady who dresses in black and looks like an extra out of a Godfather flashback. She has visions, and she puts spells on people, and she scares the crap out of me.
"You," Grandma Bella said, pointing her finger at me, "you broke my Joseph's heart."
"No way," I said, "swear to God."
"Is there a ring on your finger?"
"No."
"It's a scandal," she said. "A respectable woman would be married and have children by now. You go to his house and tempt him with your body, and then you leave. I should put the eye on you, make your teeth fall out of your head, cause your female parts to shrink away until there's nothing left of them."
Grandma Mazur elbowed her way through the crush of people around the cookie table.
"What's going on here? What did I miss about female parts?"
"Your granddaughter. He's a Jezebel," Grandma Bella said. "I'm gonna put the eye on her."
Grandma Mazur pulled a .45 long barrel out of her big black patent leather purse and pointed it at Bella.
"You put your finger to your eye and I'll put a hole in your head that's so big you could push a potato through it."
Bella's eyes rolled around in her head.
"I'm having a vision. I see a fire. A terrible fire. I see a rats escaping, running from the fire. Big, ugly, sick rats. And one of the rats has come back."
Bella's eyes snapped open and focused on me.
"He's come back to get you."
"What kind of vision is that?" I said. "A rat? Are you sure about this vision thing?"
"That's all I'm gonna say," Bella said. "I'm going home."
Bella whirled on her heel and walked to the door. Grandma Mazur turned to the cookie tray and picked through the cookies.
"I could go. I paid my respects to the dead, and this cookie tray's a big disappointment."
"Did you hear anything about Michael Baroni?"
"Only that he's missing. The boys are running the store, but Emma Wilson tells me they're not getting along. Emma works there part-time. She said the young one is a trial."
"Anthony."
"That's the one. He was always a troublemaker."
We'd walked out of the funeral home and down the street to the car. I looked inside the car and saw a note on the driver's seat. "Your turn to burn, bitch."
"Such language," Grandma said. "I tell you, the world's going to heck in a handbasket."
Grandma was upset about the language. I was upset about the threat. I wasn't exactly sure what it meant, but it didn't feel good. Who was this person anyway? I pulled away from the curb and headed for my parents' house.
"I can't get that dumb note out of my head," Grandma said when we were half a block from home. "I could swear I even smell smoke."
Now that she mentioned it, I glanced in the rearview mirror and saw flames licking up the back seat. I raced the half block to my parents' house, careened into the driveway, and jerked to a stop.
"Get out! The back seat's on fire!"
Grandma turned and looked.
"Danged if it isn't!"
I ran into the house, told my mother to call the fire department, grabbed the fire extinguisher, and ran back to the car. I broke the seal on the extinguisher and sprayed the flaming back seat. My father appeared with a garden hose, and between the two of us, we got the fire under control.
A half hour later, the back seat of the Saturn was pronounced dead and flame-free by the fire department. The fire truck rumbled away down the street, and the crowd of curious neighbors dispersed. The stench of cooked upholstery hung in the air. Morelli had arrived seconds behind the fire truck. He was now standing in my parents' front yard with his hands in his pockets, wearing his unreadable cop face. "How did you know about the fire?" I asked Morelli.
"Dispatch called me. They always call me when your car explodes or goes up in flames."
I moved closer to the Saturn and peered inside. Most of the water and fire damage was confined to the back seat. Morelli had his hand at the nape of my neck.
"You're not thinking of driving this, are you?"
"It doesn't look so bad. It probably runs fine."
"The back seat is completely gutted, and there's a big hole in the floorboard."
He was right. Problem was, this was the only car I had. The only thing worse than driving this car would be borrowing the 53 Buick Grandma Mazur inherited from my great-uncle Sandor. Been there, done that, don't want to do it again. "It doesn't look so bad. It probably runs fine." I slid behind the wheel and proved my point by rolling the engine over. "See?
Get out of this wreck and let me drive you."
"I hate when you do the macho man thing."
"I hate when you're stubborn."
Morelli was right, of course. I was being stubborn. Problem was, I couldn't help myself. Morelli brought out the stubborn in me. Can Clean was a small mom-and-pop dry cleaners that had been operating in the Berg for as long as I can remember. The Macaroni family owned Can Clean. Mama Macaroni, Mario Macaroni, and Gina Macaroni were the principals, and a bunch of miscellaneous macaronis helped out when needed. Mama Macaroni was a contemporary of Grandma Bella and Grandma Mazur. Mama Macaroni's shrunken body, wrapped in layers of black, curved over her cane and conjured up images of mummified larvae. She had a boulder of a mole set into the road map of her face, somewhere in the vicinity of Atlanta. Three hairs grew out of the mole. The mole was horrifying and compelling. It was the dermatological equivalent to a seven-car crash with blood and guts spread all over the highway. I'd never been to Can Clean that Mama Macaroni wasn't sitting on a stool behind the counter. Mama nodded to customers, but seldom spoke. Her son Mario supervised the day-to-day operation. Her daughter-in-law Gina kept the books. "It's not difficult," Gina said to me. "You'll be working the register. You take the clothes from the customer and you do a count. Then you fill out the order form and give a copy to the customer. You put a copy in the bag with the clothes, and you put the third copy in the box by the register. Then you put the bag in one of the rolling bins. When a customer comes in to pick up his clean clothes, you search for the clothes by the number on the top of his receipt." Mama Macaroni mumbled something in Italian. "Mama says you should be careful. She says she's keeping her eye on you." I smiled at Mama Macaroni and gave her a thumbs up. Mama Macaroni responded with a death glare. "When you have time between customers, you can tag the clothes," Gina said. "Every single garment must get tagged. We have a machine that you use, and you have to make sure that the number on the tag is the same as the number on the customer's receipt." By noon, I'd completely lost the use of my right thumb from using the tagging machine.
"You gotta go faster,"
Mama Macaroni said to me from her stool.
"I see you slow down. You think we pay for nothing?"
By 3 o'clock, I was sure I'd been tagging clothes for at least 5 days without a break. My feet ached from standing for 8 hours, and I had a nervous twitch in my eye from Mama Macaroni's constant scrutiny. I took my bag from under the counter and looked over at Mama Macaroni. "See you tomorrow."
"What do you mean, see you tomorrow? Where do you think you're going?"
"Home. My shift is over."
"Look at little Miss Clock Watcher here."
She threw her hands into the air.
"Go, who needs you? And don't be late tomorrow. Sunday is big day. We the only cleaner open on a Sunday."
"Okay, and have a nice mole."
Shit, did I just say that?
Have a nice day. I'd parked the Saturn in the small lot adjacent to Can Clean. I left the building and circled the car. I didn't see any notes. I didn't smell anything burning. Guess my stalker was taking a day off. Rex was snoozing in his soup can when I let myself into my apartment. There were no messages on my machine. I shuffled into the bedroom, kicked my shoes off, and crawled under the covers. The best I could say about today was that it was marginally better than yesterday. At least I hadn't gotten fired. Problem was, it was hard to tell if not getting fired from CanClean was a good thing or a bad thing. A couple hours later, I was still awake, and I was thinking about eating something. I decided to take myself off to search for fast food. I laced up my sneakers, ran a brush through my hair, and applied lip gloss. I took the stairs debating the merits of a chicken quesadilla against the satisfaction of a dozen donuts. I was still undecided when I pushed through the lobby door and crossed the lot to my car. Turns out it wasn't a decision I needed to make, because my car was wearing a police boot. I ripped my cell phone out of my bag and punched Morelli's number in. "There's a police boot on my car. Did you put it on?"
"Not personally."
"I want it off."
"I'm crimes against persons. I'm not traffic."
"Fine. I want to report a crime against a person. Some jerk booted my car." Morelli blew out a sigh and disconnected. I dialed Ranger. "I have a problem. My car's been booted."
"And?"
"I need to get the boot off."
"Where are you?"
"My apartment."
"Babe,"
Ranger said, and the connection went dead. 10 minutes later, Ranger's Porsche rolled to a stop next to the Saturn. Ranger was in his usual black t-shirt that looked like it was painted onto his biceps and clung to his washboard stomach. Black cargo pants that had lots of pockets for Ranger's goodies, although clearly not all his goodies were relegated to the pockets. "Can you get the boot off?" I asked Ranger. Ranger towed the big chunk of metal that was wrapped around my tire.
"Thanks on his way with the equipment. How'd you manage to get booted in the lot?"
"Morelli. He thinks the car's unsafe."
"And?"
"Okay, so it's got some cosmetic problems."
"How'd this happen?"
"It was the note guy. I took Grandma to a viewing at Steva's, and when we left, there was a note in the car. It said it was my turn to burn, and then the back seat caught fire. I think the note guy is Steva's kid, Spiro. Joe's Grandma Bella told me she had a vision about rats running away from a fire, and one of the rats was sick, and it came back to get me."
"And you think that rat is Spiro?"
"Do you remember Spiro? Beady rat eyes, no chin, bad overbite, mousy brown hair?"
"Bella's a little crazy, babe."
"A guy named Michael Baroni disappeared 10 days ago. 62 years old, upstanding citizen, owned the hardware store on Rudd and Liberty. Locked the store up at the end of the day and disappeared off the face of the earth. Morelli punched Baroni into missing persons and found there were two other similar cases, Benny Gorman and Louis Lazar. Connie said you're looking for Gorman."
"Yeah, and he feels like a dead end."
"Maybe it's a dead end because he's dead."
It crossed my mind. "Did you know Baroni?" Ranger asked me.
"I went to school with his youngest son, Anthony. Here's the thing about Michael Baroni. There's no obvious reason why he disappeared. No gambling debts, no drinking or drug problems, no secret sex life. He just locked up the store, got into his car, and drove off into the sunset. He did this on the same day and at the same time Lazar and Gorman drove off into the sunset. It was like they were all going to a meeting."
"I made the Lazar connection," Ranger said. "I didn't know there was a third."
"That's because you're the Stark Street expert, and I'm the Berg expert."
"You handed your cuffs and fake badge over to Connie," Ranger said. "Why the interest in Baroni and Lazar and Gorman?"
"In the beginning, Baroni was just Berg gossip and cop talk. Now I'm thinking Spiro's gone psycho, and he's back in town and stalking me. And Baroni might be connected to Spiro. All through school, Spiro hung out with Anthony Baroni. Suppose Spiro's back and he's got something bad going on. Suppose Anthony's involved and somehow his dad got in the way."
"That's a lot of supposing. Have you talked to Morelli about this?"
"No. I'm not talking to Morelli about anything. He booted my car. I'm doing all my talking to you."
"His loss is my gain."
"This is your lucky day," I said to Ranger. Ranger curled his fingers into the front of my jean jacket and pulled me close.
"How much luck are we talking about?"
"Not that much luck." Ranger brushed a light kiss over my lips.
"Someday," he said.
And he was probably right. Ranger and I have a strange relationship. He's my mentor and protector and friend. He's also hot and mysterious and oozes testosterone. A while ago, he was my lover for a single, spectacular night. We both walked away wanting more, But to date, my practical Berg upbringing plus strong survival instincts have kept Ranger out of my bed. Ranger released my jacket.
I'm going to take a look at Baroni's house and store. Do you want to ride along?
Okay, but it's just to keep you company. I'm done with all that fugitive apprehension stuff.
Still my lucky day, Ranger said.
It was after 6 by the time we got to Rudd and Liberty, and the store was closed. We cruised past the front, turned the corner, and took the service road at the rear. Ranger drove the Porsche down the road and paused at Baroni's back door. There was a black Corvette parked in the small lot.
Someone's working late, Ranger said. Do you know the car?
No, but I'm guessing it belongs to Anthony. His two older brothers are married and have kids, and I can't see them finding money for a toy like this. Ranger turned the corner and pulled to the curb. There'd been heavy cloud cover all day, and now it was drizzling. After 5 minutes, the Corvette rolled past us with Anthony driving. Ranger put the Porsche in gear and followed Anthony at a distance. Anthony wandered through the Berg and stopped at Pino's Pizza. He was inside Pino's for a couple minutes and returned to his car carrying two large pizza boxes. He found his way to Hamilton Avenue, crossed Hamilton, and after 2 blocks he pulled into a driveway that belonged to a 2-story townhouse. The townhouse had an attached garage, but Anthony didn't use it. Anthony parked in the driveway and hustled to the small front porch. He fumbled with his keys, got the door open, and rushed inside.
That's a lot of pizza for a single guy, Ranger said. And he has something occupying space in his garage. It's raining, and he has his hands full of pizza boxes, and he parked in the driveway.
Maybe Spiro's in there. Maybe he's got his car parked in Anthony's garage.
I can see that possibility turned you on, Ranger said.
It would be nice to find Spiro and put an end to the harassment. Shades were drawn on all the windows. Ranger idled for a few minutes in front of the townhouse and moved on to Michael Baroni's house. It was a large house by Berg standards, maybe 2,000 square feet. It had a full front porch and a postage stamp front yard. Shades were up in the Baroni house, and it was easy to look from one end to the other. A lone woman moved in the house, Carla Baroni, Michael Baroni's wife. She settled herself in front of the television in the living room and lost herself to the evening news. I was spellbound watching Carla.
It must be awful not to know, I said to Ranger. To have someone you love disappear. Not to know if he was murdered and buried in a shallow grave, or if you drove him away, or if he was sick and couldn't find his way home. It makes my problem seem trivial.
Being on the receiving end of threatening letters isn't trivial, Ranger said.
Everything's relative, I thought. The threatening letters weren't nearly as frightening as the prospect of spending another 8 hours with Mama the Mole Macaroni. And the problems I was thinking about were personal. My life had no clear direction. My goals were small and immediate. Pay the rent, get a better car, make a dinner decision. I didn't have a career. I didn't have a husband. I didn't have any special talents. Even my pet was small, a hamster. I liked Rex a lot, but he didn't exactly make a big statement. Ranger put the Porsche into gear and headed across town. We checked out Louis Lazar's house and bar. Then we went 4 blocks north on Stark and parked in front of Gorman's garage. The garage was dark. A close sign hung on the office door.
Gorman's manager kept the garage going for a week on his own and then cut out, Ranger said. Gorman isn't married. He was living with a woman, but she has no claim to his property. From what I can tell, the business was operating in the black. Gorman had a mean streak, but he wasn't stupid. He would have made arrangements to keep the garage running if he was going FTA. I can't see him just walking away.
We cut back 2 blocks and parked in front of a rundown apartment building.
This was Gorman's last known address, Ranger said. His girlfriend didn't wait as long as his manager. The girlfriend had a new guy hanging his clothes in her closet on day 5. If she knew Gorman's location, she'd have given him up for a pass to the multiplex.
No one saw him after he drove away from the garage? Ranger watched the building.
No, all I know is he drove north on Stark, consistent with Lazar.
North on Stark didn't mean much. Stark Street deteriorated as it went north. Eventually, Stark got so bad even the gangs abandoned it. North on Stark also led to Route 1, and Route 1 led to the entire rest of the country. I was in the Saturn parked next to CanClean. It was Sunday. It was the start of a new day. It was 1 minute to seven, and Morelli was on my cell.
I'm in your lot, he said. I stopped by to take you to work. Where are you? And where's your car?
I'm at CanClean. I drove.
What happened to the boot?
I don't know. It disappeared. There was a full 60 seconds of silence while I knew Morelli was doing deep breathing, working at not getting nuts. I looked at my watch, and my stomach clenched. Mama Macaroni appeared at car side and stuck her face in my open window, her monster mole just inches from my face.
What are you doing out here? You think we pay for talking under the phone? We got a work to do.
Jesus, Morelli said. What the hell is that?
Mama Macaroni.
She has a voice like fingernails on a chalkboard.
I needed a pill really bad. It was noon, and I had Mama Macaroni screeching into my left ear.
The pink tags for dry cleaning and the green tags for laundry. You mixing them up. You make a mess of everything.
The tinkle bell attached to the front door jangled, and I looked up to see Lula walk in.
Hey, girlfriend, Lula said. What's the word?
Lula was wearing a tight orange spandex skirt that came about 3 inches below her ass, and a matching orange top that was stretched tight across her boobs and belly.
What a word?
Mama Macaroni asked.
Who is this big orange person?
This is my friend Lula.
No friends. Why do you think this is a party?
Hey, chill, Lula said to Mama. I came to pick up my dry cleaning. I'm a legitimate customer.
I had the merry-go-round in motion looking for Lula's cleaning. The motor whirred, and plastic-sleeved, hangered orders swished by me, carried along on an overhead system of tracks.
I'll take Vinny's and Connie's, too, Lula said.
Mama was off her stool.
You no take anything until I say so. Let me see the slip.
I had Lula's cleaning in hand, and Mama stepped in front of me.
What's this on the slip? What's this discount?
You said I got a discount, I told her.
You get a discount. This big pumpkin don't get no discount.
Hey, who you calling a pumpkin? Lula said, hands on hips.
I'm calling you a pumpkin. You a big, fat pumpkin, and you don't get no pumpkin discount.
Mama turned on me.
You try to pull a fast one and give everybody a discount. Maybe you get a kickback. You think you'll make some money on the side.
I don't like to disrespect old people, Lula said, and you're about as old as they get, but that don't mean you can insult my friend.
I had to get Lula out of the store. If Mama Macaroni called Lula a pumpkin one more time, Lula was going to squash Mama Macaroni, and Mama Macaroni was going to be Mama Pancake. I shoved Lula's clothes at her, but Mama got to them first.
Give me those clothes,
Mama said.
She can't have them until she pays a full price. Maybe I don't give them to her at all. Maybe I keep them for evidence that you steal from us.
I need that red sweater, Lula said. That's my most flattering sweater.
Too bad for you. You should think of this before you steal from us.
That does it. I don't like your attitude. I'm a bounty hunter now, and I don't got time for this like when I was a file clerk.
And Lula got a knee up on the counter and lunged for Mama Macaroni and the dry cleaning. Mama jumped away and scrambled around a clothes bin, hugging the dry cleaning to her chest. Gina Macaroni and three other women came running from the back room. Gina was wielding a broom like a baseball bat. What's going on?
They trying to steal from us,
Mama said.
I just want my dry cleaning. I paid for it fair and square.
Lula pulled her Glock out of her handbag, and all the women shrieked and dropped to the floor, except for Mama Macaroni. Mama Macaroni reached underneath her long black skirt, pulled out a semi-automatic, and started shooting. She was shooting wild, taking out light fixtures and chunks of plaster from the ceiling. Lula and I dove for the front of the store, rolled out the door, and scrambled to the Firebird. Lula jumped behind the wheel, and we roared off. Lula pulled into the Cluck in a Bucket lot.
How long do you get for lunch? We might as well have lunch as long as we're out.
I don't think lunch is an issue. My employer just called me a thief and shot at me. That would lead me to believe I'm unemployed.
I wouldn't be so sure of that. I didn't hear anybody fire you.
The old lady wasn't shooting at you, and I didn't hear her say you're fired.
We went inside, placed our order, and waited for our food.
Well, okay, now that I think about it, probably you're fired, Lula said. It was a nasty job anyway. You could get a better job than that. You could even get a job here. I bet you get free chicken.
Lula went back to the counter.
We want to see the manager. My friend's interested in having a job here.
I had Lula by the arm, and I was trying to drag her away from the counter.
I don't want to work here. I'd have to wear one of those awful uniforms.
A little guy came up behind me. He looked like a chubby pink pig in pants.
I'm the manager, Milton Mann.
This is Stephanie Plum, Lula said. She's looking for a job.
Minimum wage, Mann said. We need someone for the 3 to 11 shift.
How about food? Does she eat free? And what about takeout?
There's no eating on the job, but she can eat for free on her dinner break. Takeout gets a 20% discount.
That sounds fair. She'll take the job.
Come in a half hour early tomorrow, Mann said to me. I'll give you your uniform and you can fill out the paperwork.
Look at that, Lula said, claiming her tray of food. See how easy it is to get a job? There's jobs everywhere.
Yeah, but I don't want to work here.
20% off on takeout, Lula said. You can't beat that. You can feed your family and friends.
I took a piece of fried chicken from the bucket. My car is back at the dry cleaner.
And I didn't get my sweater. That was my favorite sweater, too.
I finished my piece of chicken. Are you going back to get your sweater?
Damn skippy I'm going back. Only thing is, I'm waiting until they're closed and it's nice and dark out.
Lula looked over my shoulder.
Uh-oh, here comes Officer Hottie, and he don't look happy.
Morelli moved behind me and curled his fingers into the back of my jacket collar.
I need to talk to you. Outside.
When we got outside, Morelli dragged me to the far side of the building, away from the big plate glass windows. He still had a grip on my jacket, and he still had the don't mess with me cop face. He held tight to my jacket, and he stared at his shoes, head down. Practicing anger management? I asked. He shook his head and bit into his lower lip.
No, I'm trying not to laugh. That crazy old lady shot at you, and I don't want to trivialize it, but I totally lost it at Can Clean. And I wasn't the only one. I was there with three uniforms who responded to the call, and we all had to go around to the back of the building to compose ourselves. Was there really a shootout between the old lady and Lula?
Yeah, but Mama Macaroni did all the shooting. Lula and I were lucky to get out alive. How'd you know where to find me?
I did a drive-by on all the donut shops and fast food places in the area. And by the way, Mama Macaroni said to tell you that you're fired.
Morelli leaned into me and nuzzled my neck.
We should celebrate.
You wanted to celebrate when I got the job. Now you celebrate because I've lost the job?
I like to celebrate.
Morelli went to file a report on my shootout, and Lula was off to play badass bounty hunter. I pulled my cell phone out of my bag and called my dad. A couple years ago, my dad retired from his job at the post office, and now he drives a cab part-time. It's me. I need a cab.
Where are we going?
He asked when he picked me up. What's Mom making for supper?
Meatballs with spaghetti, and I saw a chocolate cake in the kitchen.
I'll go home with you. There were two cars parked in front of my parents' house. One belonged to my sister, and one belonged to Sally Sweet, a friend of mine who was helping my mom plan my sister's wedding. All through school, my sister Valerie looked like the Virgin Mary, and she had a personality to match, Little Miss Perfect, the exact opposite of her sister, Stephanie, who was Miss Disaster. Valerie graduated college in the top 10% of her class and married a perfectly nice guy. They followed his job to L.A. They had two girls. And one day, the perfectly nice guy ran off to Tahiti with a babysitter. So Valerie moved back home with her girls. Angie is the firstborn and a near-perfect clone of Valerie the Virgin. Mary Alice is 2 years behind Angie, and Mary Alice thinks she's a horse. It's a little over a year now since Valerie returned, and she's since gained 60 pounds, had a baby out of wedlock, and gotten engaged to her boss, Albert Clown, who also happens to be the baby's father. Valerie and Sally were huddled at the dining room table, studying the seating chart for the wedding reception.
Hey, girlfriend, Sally said to me. Long time no see.
Sally drove a school bus during the week, and weekends he played in a band in full drag. He was 6'5" tall, had roses tattooed on his biceps, hair everywhere, a large hooked nose, and he was lanky in a guitar-playing maniac kind of way. Okay, not your average wedding planner, but he'd sort of adopted us, and he was free. I went to the kitchen. My mother was at the stove stirring the red sauce. Emily Ressler's daughter got a pin for 10 years service at the bank. 10 years, and she was never once in a shootout. I have a daughter who works one day at a dry cleaner's and turns it into the gunfight at the OK Corral. And on a Sunday, too.
It wasn't me. It was Mama Macaroni, and she wouldn't give Lula her dry cleaning.
Grandma was at the small kitchen table.
I hate to think you couldn't take down Mama Macaroni. If I'd been there, you would have got the dry cleaning. In fact, I got a mind to go over there and get it for you.
No,
my mother and I said in unison. Is there any news about Michael Baroni? I asked.